Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. Today is an awesome Wednesday, and we're excited to be with you today. Excited for the topic. You know, this show is about helping you save money on taxes, protect your assets, build wealth, and we'll be talking about how to build on what you know to create a successful business today. I think a really important topic for all of us who are out there with businesses ourselves or self-employed or wanting to start something, really a good focal point to as we talk about starting businesses and focusing on what you know.
Yeah, love the topic. And it's amazing. Matt and I, over the years, see trends as we consult with thousands of clients every year. Between Matt and I, literally probably close to a couple thousand clients a year over the phone, in person, whatever the case may be, let alone speaking events and hearing about people's stories. But we see trends, we see examples, and people that are more successful know their product, know their service, know what the heck they're doing. The people that are like, oh my gosh, this would be the coolest thing ever. And you're like, how long have you known about this? Or how well do you know it? And
yeah,
sometimes fizzles out.
And I, you know, and sometimes I love the stories though, too, that I always come across people, you know, friends and also just in, obviously in our practice day to day, but you'll hear these stories of, yeah, I do such and such for my business. And it's like, really, you make money at that? And it's like, yeah, I'm kind of like the best person at it. Or I'm, you know, it's just some things you just never think of. There's this guy that was like way into horse racing. So he started doing parties for the Kentucky Derby and like, and he has like a whole business centered around that where like people pay you to go to these parties and he makes a lot of money doing it. I was like, really? That's all you do? He's like, well, I go to some other races, but they're not as big money makers. But anyways, there's just odd little ways, you know, to find a niche and to figure out something that, you know, and have kind of a, advantage over others perhaps in doing. So we'll be obviously diving into that and, Mark will be introducing our guest as well, who's because, you know, I mean, Mark and I are going to obviously be pontificating on what we think, but we figured we'd bring a guest on.
Yeah, bottom of the hour as usual. And we really, really appreciate the continued success of the show. Please continue to share the show link on your social media and with friends and family. If there's a show episode you really that really speaks to you, please share it with others. We get new listeners all the time going, oh my gosh, where were you guys? It's so nice to have someone that understands the tax, the legal, the business, bringing it all together. And there's a great podcast out there, a lot of very unique podcasts that focus in specific areas. This is our area. And if you don't have an accounting law podcast you're listening to that kind of brings it all together, we hope to be that one for you. So share it with your friends and family. Now, part of that, every week we do a little tax and legal tip, something that might, you know, get your juices flowing, get something rolling, you know, something that might give you an idea. And I think this week, Matt Sorensen, he's doing the tax tip. Is that right?
Yeah, baby. I'm ready. I'm ready to give a tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Now I want to talk about Roth conversions here for a minute. And this, I'm just going to rattle off a couple things you may not have known about Roth conversions. So Roth accounts for retirement accounts are those that you put money in, you don't get a tax deduction, but the money comes out totally tax-free at retirement. So it grows tax-free. It comes out tax-free at retirement. It's really cool. Really, there's no better way to make money in the United States than a Roth retirement account. It's the only tax-free way to make money in the United States. So they're pretty cool accounts, but I want to talk about converting to Roth. A lot of people have traditional accounts. Maybe you have a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k. You can do what's called a Roth conversion, where you can convert those traditional dollars. Let's say you have $100,000 in an IRA, and you can convert that to a Roth account. Now, if you have an IRA and you want to convert it to Roth, you'd go from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, and you convert that. Let's say it's $100,000. And what you're going to get, though, is a 1099 for $100,000. And that means you got to put $100,000 on your tax return as income, and you're going to pay tax on that. Now, that's kind of a bummer, but I want to this is one of those things. It's like no pain, no gain. Okay. And if you do the Roth conversion, I think it hurts. I know it hurts when you got to pay the tax, and you could break it up over a few years to kind of lessen the blow. But it's one of those things I realized 10 years out, you're going to be looking back thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I converted to Roth. So why don't you think about it in that way? Also, keep in mind you can convert traditional 401k to Roth 401k if you work at a company or maybe you have a solo 401k. The majority of those plans, now over 90% of those plans, allow for Roth 401k accounts within the 401k. So you can also convert traditional 401k dollars, even if you're with, you know, some Fortune 500 company with a, you know, a 401k you're buying mutual funds in, you could even convert that likely to Roth. Now, one last thing I want to note about this, you used to be able to pay the tax on the Roth conversion over 2 years. That rule has gone away. So now whatever you do convert, you got to pay tax in that tax year for the year you convert. So you can't stretch it out over 2 years anymore. And that's my tip. Think about Roth conversion. Great way to get a tax-free pot of money to go and invest.
I love it, Matt. Great job. Great comments. I love the Roth conversion, and I won't bring up the word, the C word, chunking, you know, because I brought that up last week. So if you don't know how to chunk an IRA, what, you know, listen to last week's show. all right. Well, we're going to jump into our, if I may, I'll throw out our legal tip, and then we'll maybe get into our question of the week.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Now, this is a legal tip that definitely is on that shower after comment. And here's why I'm bringing this up. Some of you in our newsletter this week, if you don't subscribe to our newsletter, and it could be ending up in your spam, so make sure you approve us as a sender. We have a newsletter that goes out every week. We usually include a couple videos, deadlines, all sorts of good things. Well, I shot a video for YouTube this last week. I got a great YouTube channel, 50 plus videos. They're all free. Get on there. Check it out. Got, of course, longer, awesome, full-length videos in my little membership site. Email me if you have questions about the bigger content. But I shot a video last week for YouTube channel called The Land Trust Scam. Now, I know when I say that, I really start ruffling the feathers of some of you out there that use land trusts all the time and love land trusts. And when I say the land trust scam, that kind of rubs you wrong. Well, let me tell you where I'm coming from on this. And I just want to summarize that video because the views are less than our listenership. So I know there's some of you out there that are listening that maybe don't watch my YouTube videos, and there's out there some watch the YouTube vids and miss the show. So I've got to cover this. Matt and I, all of our attorneys in the office every week get some just nutty comment about, nutty comment about land trust. And what typically happens is there's some real estate guru teaching a class and they may know real estate transactions really well. And I get that. I'm not out knocking on doors every day down at the county courthouse, cutting deals on real estate. And there are tricks to the trade when it comes to that down and dirty real estate transaction. I totally get it. But there, these gurus oftentimes say, oh, just do it in a land trust. You can hide yourself. It's good asset protection. It'll save you heartache and save you money. And they may even throw in the word save you taxes, heaven forbid. But these gurus out there are just overdoing it with these land trusts. And so clients call up and go, oh, I don't need insurance. I don't need an LLC. I'm just doing it in a land trust. And I'm like, whoa, slow down, Tiger. So I really feel it is almost a scam. it really gets to the level of a scam, because these gurus want to oversimplify the process and sell you maybe some land trust documents, or oversell their strategy and smooth over the need for a little quality legal planning where you may need that LLC in the mix. So I want to state this fact. Land trusts are great. You can use land trusts for transactions. If you're closing a deal and you want to avoid the due on sale clause or minimize the risk of that, and you just want to be a little more cautious about a transaction and seasoning or something like that, a land trust could be a great way to go. They're great for transactions. But in no way, shape, or form, folks, do they protect you. There is no protection from a land trust. Soon as the litigant finds out you're the beneficiary or the trustee of this land trust, they're going to cut through it like butter. And if you think the privacy is that great, oh, they're not going to figure out who I am, I got a land trust. Well, guess what? Most of the people that are going to be pissed and suing you already know who you are, because they've been conversing with you via email or this or that. And then all of a sudden you're going to hide behind a land trust. Oh, I'm just a trustee, I don't own it or whatever. Guys, seriously, be careful using the land trust for privacy, asset protection, or tax planning. They can be used to enhance privacy. It can be used to enhance asset protection. But in and of itself, a land trust has no asset protection. So folks, please, please, please be careful and avoid the land trust in these situations. All right, there we go. There's my legal tip, Matt. Anything you want to add to that?
No, man. You got on the soapbox and you just, told people what they need to know. Give it straight to them. Don't even sugarcoat it. I think it's, there are the gurus out there, and we run into them, and they try to solve everyone's problems. They might have expertise in other areas, but they try to play lawyer, CPA. They think they know it all, and they end up selling a package of goods that just is frankly worthless. So, most of the time it causes more harm than good. So, avoid the land trust. There's a very few limited situations where we set them up for clients. 9 times out of 10, we talk a client out of it. Every once in a while, we'll use it just for privacy. But appreciate that that legal tip. Always out there. You're just trying to protect the people. That's
protect
what Markle is all about. Protect
that's right,
people.
That's right. There you go. Well,
all right,
I guess Matt, go ahead.
Well, we didn't have a question of the week last week. We had our open forum, had a lot of participation in that. Loved doing that show. So we got a question of the week. I think, Mark, you got a humdinger for us today.
Humdinger. That's a high bar to set, humdinger. Here's my question of the week. Now, if you haven't listened to our show before, this is your chance to win a close to a $15 to $20 value, depending on your mode of shipping that you may normally use when you buy a book online. But we are going to offer a free copy of my newest book, The Tax and Legal Playbook, and Matt's book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook, right now. Right now on the show, you have a chance to win either book by quickly responding on your smartphone or computer as you're catching this show on a podcast or listening to us live right now. You can email Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com. That's Matt with one T at kkoslawyers.com, or Mark at kkoslawyers.com, M-A-R-K. Send us a quick response to the following question, and the first to reply with the most accurate answer wins a copy of our book. So here's my situation I encountered this week. I had a client call up, and they said, Mark, grandma died, and we get it's probably, every week we have those little notices that come through. Some client or another has passed away, or family member, because we're doing a lot of estate planning and business stuff. So it happens, right? Life's, it's going to happen. It's going to come after you. So so here's the deal. This grandma passed away, and the kids are on the phone, and they're like, hey, Mark, mom's got this trust. Everything should be in order. We're going to email it over to you. I'm like, great. Let's just have a quick conversation about it. You're going to be able to avoid probate. You're going to love it. It's going to rock. They're like, oh, awesome. We were hoping the mom's trust would really pay off. So they email it over. We get on our phone call. We're just going to kind of go through the administration of the trust and answer any questions. And in the exhibit, they had listed all the property that grandma had owned. It was pretty straightforward. Grandma owns the home, and she had a lot nearby and another little rental house. And grandma had these little homes, and she had listed them in the exhibit to the trust. And I was like, great, okay. Do you have a copy of the deeds too? So we can, you know, tidy this up, and who are we going to deed them to? And we were reading through the trust, and one of the family members emailed it over right during our call, and here's the deeds. And lo and behold, the trust was not on the title. Grandma's name was still on the title. And so the family started to have questions. They're like, well, Mark, we've got this trust and the exhibit is really clear. It's notarized and everything's good here. But the deed doesn't have the trust name on it. Is there a problem? And the question is, does grandma's family have to go through probate? Even with that double notarized witness, awesome exhibit trust, does that do the trick? Are they going to avoid probate? So please respond with your answer to, does grandma get out of probate? And the earliest to respond will win a copy of our book. And we appreciate you guys. Thank you so much for participating in the question of the week. Dun, dun, dun. We don't have a jingle for this. We should really have a song that kind of comes on after the question of the week, Matt.
I know. It's brought to you by KQS Lawyers, the question of the week.
Yeah. If any of you want to give us thousands of dollars, we will let you sponsor the question of the week. You know, we'll get a jingle for you and everything.
Yeah. Or dozens, whatever. Whatever it takes.
Yeah. Dozens of dollars. Yeah. Just throw out a price. We're interested.
All right. Well, I'm excited about this topic today, Mark. Talking about creating a business and building on what you know today. We do have a special guest here. I think you wanted to introduce, and I guess we'll also be on the line here.
Yeah. Do you want to introduce our guest, or were you saying throw it my way?
No. Yeah, I'd be happy to do so. So our guest today. Let's see here. Okay, I've got him here. I've got a whole bio now. Is Mike Glauber. So he is the executive director of the Clark Center for Entrepreneurship in the John M. Huntsman School of Business. Boy, that's a mouthful. Clark Center at the John M. Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University. So those Aggie fans out there, Mark and I are partial to the University of Utah when it comes to Utah sports, but Utah State's kind of a neutral party. It's, at least he's not from BYU. So, more importantly, Mike is the author of a number of books, and he also did a 4,000-mile bicycle ride across America and interviewed over 100 entrepreneurs, and a lot of insight from those interviews, and was on a lot of radio shows and TV shows in doing this trip. So we thought he'd be a great guest to come on and talk about this topic on building on what you know to create a successful business.
Well, I love it. I've got to push the right button here. So without any further ado, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Well, we're excited to have you here. And we introduced the topic a little earlier at the top of the show. And for anybody that's joined us a little late in the show, this is all about choosing that right type of business for you, as well as what do you need to do to maybe even be more successful at what you've already chosen to do. I know, Mike, you've written multiple books on this. You consult on it around the country, helping people with their small business. It's exactly what Matt and I do, of course, with a little tax and legal twist. So we really feel a kindred spirit with you. So thanks
Great.
For being on with us.
And I attended, by the way, the University of Utah, and I love it. I love the sports there. And I'm glad that you're not partial towards BYU.
Oh, no. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we better not go there.
So you Utah sports fans, yeah.
Yeah, Matt will get me started, and then I'll lose probably 10 listeners today if I get off on a rant. But I do want to say, in all fairness, I am a little excited about the BYU coaching staff this year. Matt and I have So, I want to see them do well, and so they can do really well, get really highly ranked, so when the Utes beat them, then we're better off. So. But anyway, yeah, for those that aren't a Utah related in some form or fashion, folks out there, there's a huge rivalry. It's kind of like the Michigan State rivalry, the Florida State rivalry, is the Utah BYU rivalry. But anyway, it's not football season yet. Mike, please tell us. Our first question of you is, where did you come up with this idea to kind of focus on, do what you know best type theory? How did that speak to you? Where did you come up with that idea as you were starting to write about it and speak about it?
Well, I was very concerned a few years ago about this major employment shift we are facing. It's a result of technology, and technology is eliminating jobs in nearly every single industry. You know, we have software replacing accountants and analysts. We have e-commerce. We have self-checkout lines. We have automated storage and retrieval systems in warehouses. We have robots now replacing factory workers and even security employees. We have online courses replacing brick-and-mortar schools, delivery drones, smart cars, and so jobs are starting to go away, and it's the first time in our history where as corporate revenue increases, we're not seeing an increase in employment. In fact, we're seeing a decrease in employment. And there was a remarkable study done a few years ago by Oxford University that they analyzed 702 occupations, and they said 47% of these will be gone soon, within the next decade or so. And so being a professor at the university and having a lot of these students, you know, I thought, you know, the vast majority of us will work in smaller companies, and these smaller companies kind of get slighted in the media. We hear about the Facebooks and the Googles and the eBays and the big venture-backed gazelles that are growing rapidly. And I thought, you know, we really need to focus on the kinds of companies that everyday men and women all across America are building successfully, and really study what they're doing and see if we can come up with a set of principles that will allow, you know, our students and anyone in the country to start and build a successful business. And so the idea of building on what you know, that was one of the principles that came out of this research project where we rode our bikes across America and interviewed 100 really exciting, successful, you know, entrepreneurs who are just like me and you. They're everyday people.
Well, now what can you tell us about what you learned as you interviewed these entrepreneurs? I love where you came from this, by the way, that explanation. But what did you learn from these entrepreneurs that, you know, could apply to other people who are in the trenches starting a business, or who are self-employed, or who are at the edge about, you know, thinking about making the jump to start their own business? What did you learn that's helpful to them?
A couple things. The first thing we noticed very clearly with everyone we interviewed is that they were very purpose-driven. They had a why or a strong reason for starting this business that was really exciting and motivating to them. Not one person of the 100 that we met said, oh, I just need some money, so I started a business to make money. But they were doing something they were very passionate about. They were creating jobs for their family members, for their community. They were giving better service. They were innovating new products. They were going to use their revenue to, you know, make significant contributions to the community or to solve a social problem. And so they had a purpose that was bigger than just financial gain. And then the second thing we noticed, which is the topic here today.
Mike, before you interject on the second item, can I comment on the first one? Because I really think you said something powerful there. And I really want to reach out to those listening to the show. Thanks, man. Those listening to the show today that are like, well, I already have a business. You know, guys, give me something here that I can take away today. I may be investing in real estate. I may be online business or doing something full time to support me and my family. So what's the point here, the takeaway? Well, I think you said something very important, Mike, and I'd like you to highlight this. Is you said the word passion, and then you said social or some other purpose that enhances, and that's the word I want to add to that. I think if any of you are in a business now where you're like, man, I'm burned out. I can't do it anymore, or I can't think of any new ideas. I'm trying to get up on Monday morning, and I'm not loving my business like I used to. And there's some great books out there, Getting Your Mojo Back. But getting that passion back as well is, I think what you just said there is really insightful, that if you can find something to enhance your business, is there something you can do in your business to now add a charitable purpose to it, or a community or social purpose, and it could open new doors for your business. It could increase more sales, and it could also just give you that drive back, that something that you know, but getting that passion back. And so, Mike, could you comment on that, kind of that passion and that of what you found when you were interviewing people too?
Yeah, having a strong purpose. You know, the first company I started, I was a university professor, and I was quite young when I got my PhD, and I always thought I got to go do real business to practice what I've been preaching. And, you know, I was just driven to create a company that would be the envy of an industry, that people would go, wow, those guys are really, really good. And so that's kind of what drove me and kept me moving. And I interviewed Tony Conza, the founder of Blimpy, and he said after his company had grown to a dozen stores, he just lost the enthusiasm, and it was just so hard. And he went off to Tanzania to visit a cousin and kind of had a long meeting with himself and decided that of all the options that he had, self-employment was far better than doing something boring for somebody else. And so he set a number of goals and came back and said, I'm going to open 1,000 stores and I'm going to give the best service and have the best products. And so the passion comes and goes. You know, we have to be realistic. Business is hard. And so you have to continually be evaluating why you're doing it, comparing it with, you know, working maybe for someone else at a job you don't like, with a company you're not impressed with. And you can always find reasons to keep you moving and keep you going. And a lot of it is, you know, goal setting, problem solving, contributing to the broader community. Money, just making money. There's lots of ways to make money quick, and that's just not enough to build a successful, sustainable company. And I'll tell you why this is so important. We noticed that if you have that strong purpose, it gets you through, you know, all those hard times that you're going to face because you're wanting to do something important and special. It also attracts team members to your organization. They say, wow, I like this mission, this purpose. I want to contribute and add value to this company. And then even more important, it attracts customers to your business. Simon Sinek has written a great book called Start With Why, and he shows convincingly that, you know, people don't buy what we do, they buy why we do it. And so if you're saying, hey, here's what we're trying to do, here's the problem we're trying to solve, here's the kind of service we want to offer, here are the new products we want to innovate and be the best at, people get excited about that. Your customers then buy into you. And so we found that you know, that purpose, which leads to great passion and tenacity, was really critical for all of these entrepreneurs.
Yeah, that's a great book, Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. I just finished that, actually, and I was thinking about it as you were making some of your comments. Now, you were going to, I think, hit on a second point, and I think we're going to get into this build on what you know specifically. Maybe you can just touch on that. And, as you know, you surveyed these entrepreneurs on what did they know? I mean, I guess they have a starting point of some advantage or something. I mean, can you maybe talk about that and how that helped them be successful?
Yeah, this was fascinating because there's kind of a debate right now of whether you can just go out and start any business in any industry that you have no experience or familiarity with. And here's what we found. We found that about a third of these people had actually worked in the industry in which they started their business. So they were working in it. They had contacts. They had mentors. They had customers, they knew suppliers, they knew the problems, they knew the missing pieces. Some of them even took the idea to their employer, and the employer wasn't interested. But the idea or the opportunity emerged from being in the thick of the industry. Another third of the people worked in a related industry, so they saw the industry from a short distance, and they saw opportunities there. For example, one fellow was a pilot for 25 years, and then he started a sightseeing company where he flies a World War II biplane up and down the Oregon coast. So he knew the aviation industry, he knew airplanes, and so then he switched to sightseeing in a plane. So that's a related industry. But this was the fascinating one. About a third of them had no experience whatsoever working in an industry, the industry, but they were very serious and frequent users of the product. So they knew the industry from a customer's perspective. We didn't meet anyone at all that just said, I want to go open a restaurant or I want to go open a construction company without, you know, either working in the industry or being a serious user of the products. And so, for example, we interviewed a triathlete, a professional triathlete, a woman named Nicole DeBoom, who was not happy with the clothing that was being made for female triathletes. And so she talked to all of her
If you've watched a triathlete race lately, I still don't know if they're – I'm satisfied with it. Those little unitards are the ugliest outfits.
Well,
are you kidding me?
Well,
I don't even want to be in a triathlon because if I have to wear one of those, I'm out.
Well, here's what she did. She was running on a training run by a building, and there was a lot of glass, and she looked and saw her reflection, and she thought, you know, I look just like a boy. And she went home and decided she was going to create beautiful clothing for female cyclists, marathoners, and triathletes. And she started Skirt Sports and created the first woman's athletic skirt for running and triathlons and cycling. And she was a serious user of the product. And all of her friends said, yeah, we hate the clothing too. Let's make something new. And so you know, she was very experienced in the industry as a user, but not as an employee, an employee.
Mm-hmm. Man, I didn't expect you to go down the skirt route, because to me, the first thing I thought was, is that's kind of like adding a cape to a superhero for you incredible fans out there. If you add the skirt to the racing gear, doesn't that slow you down? I mean, that's like that's the death nail, maybe. I don't know. I'm just,
well, it's just
like
the typical kind of spandex bottom, but with a very lightweight skirt that's quite attractive. And she put one of those on and went out, and she actually won the Ironman Wisconsin in that skirt. And now she sold $10 million worth of those skirts.
Well, anybody that can swim a lake in Wisconsin, you deserve to win. You know, that's jeez.
Here's an interesting point. Kaufman Foundation did a long-term study, and they found that about 10 to 15% of successful entrepreneurs were serious product users like this, but they hadn't had experience in the industry. And yet down the road, 5 years later, 46% of our successful companies are launched by these serious product users. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't lose hope if you haven't worked in the industry. If you're using the products over and over again and you know all the competitors and, you know, who's making what and what works and what doesn't work, then you have great experience there to start a business doing something you know about.
Great point. We don't want to get into Mark and Matt's triathlon experiences because they have not been impressive.
not on ESPN. You will not see reruns of those on ESPN. And
yeah.
Be in a reflection of the building running by either, because it's not pretty. Okay.
What else can you I'm just thinking about go ahead, Mark. You had a question.
I wanted to throw this out. Yeah, because I think you said something interesting there too, Mike, and I haven't thought of it this way, is that – and I'm sure there's other facets to starting these entrepreneurial – I mean, I talk about entrepreneurship every day. But what was interesting is I think there's a distinction between knowing the product, knowing the industry, and knowing business. And see, it's kind of funny. Like sometimes I'll meet people that know an industry because they've worked in it for their employer, but they really don't use the product, but they know the industry. Then there's other people that buy the product, but they don't know the industry. And then there's that swath of people that may even know the product or industry, but they've always worked for someone else. And so there's that other piece. And I don't know if there's a three-legged stool in that example anywhere, but I don't know, Mike, what are your thoughts on that distinction between knowing the industry and the product and what people go through?
Well, I think the very best success stories are from entrepreneurs that both work in the industry and use the product. And I guess the takeaway, the concluding point, is that the more you know about an industry, the more you know about the suppliers, the competitors, the channels of distribution, the marketing strategies, the more you have mentors, contacts. And so you just have a greater chance for success. And the less you know about an industry, the higher your probability for failure. You just have to learn too many things through trial and error, and you burn through your passion, and you burn through your money, and you burn through your team members if you're starting with, you know, an empty set with nothing, basically.
Hey, Mike, I had one last question for you. I want to go back to the example you gave about the founder of Blimpy, who had 12 stores and went on the trip and came back and made this goal that said, I'm going to open 1,000 stores. I'm a big person on goal setting. I love goal setting. It's just been my personal life and business life. But maybe you can give a quick insight on that, on goal setting, what you could maybe be doing in your business, or maybe even speak to that specific example if there's more detail on that, just about setting goals to help you be successful in business.
Okay. Well, I've studied all the theories of motivation, and I've taught the theories of motivation, and I can tell you there's nothing more motivating than seeing a business go from point A to point B, seeing it move forward. And you get excited about it as you achieve goals. Your employees get excited about it. And so if I'm at point A and I want to go to point B, and point B is really exciting, and I see myself moving regularly towards point B, there's nothing that'll keep me more fired up and excited. And so that process involves setting goals. You know, what is your vision for your business, say, 3 years out? And, you know, I ask people to articulate, what do you want this business to be in 3 years? And then I say, okay, let's back into that. Now, what goals can we set this month and this quarter and to take us closer to that. And then as people start making progress, you know, just it becomes more exciting. It becomes more interesting. It becomes more fun. And so I think you're either moving forward or you're moving backward in business building. And goal setting is required to move forward.
I love it. Great. That just kind of defined in some way the entrepreneur spirit. I mean, I've joked about it for years that when I was in my 20s, I was like, I don't care what business is. I just want to see something grow. You know, I don't care if it's a garbage company, a landscape company, or a technology company, internet. Just seeing something take a life of itself. I think anybody listening today that has that entrepreneurial spirit, it really is addictive. It's just, it's so exciting. I, you know, just to pull, you know, a little fly fishing analogy. I've been up at a little kids camp, youth camp this last couple of days, and I took my fly fishing pole, and one of the fly fishermen up there, he was like, "Oh man, the power of the tug." The power, because like right when you set that fish jumps on your line and you feel that fish just tug and just go, I guess it doesn't have to be fly fishing, but that's just so exciting when you feel that the drug of the tug, you know, and it's that kind of thing with business. Like once you get that drug and you feel it and it's exciting, I think that's why they come up with, you know, the term serial entrepreneurs, because you want to do it over and over again, you know.
It becomes addictive, that's for sure.
It's exciting. Well, Mike, can you comment on the word hobby? I want you to comment on hobby, because that's something that I think plays into this whole passion, do what you know best. Because just this week I had a phone call with a client, and I don't want to give away his trade secret here, but he's a motorcyclist. I would probably say he's in the Harley Davidson crowd. I will at least say that. And he's setting up a little touring business, taking people on tours on motorcycles because he loves it. And I was like, dude, that is awesome. And I won't say where in the country and, you know, the parameters, of course. I want any of you that call me, I will keep it private. But I just love that idea of something that he was passionate about, a hobby, and turning it into a business. What are your thoughts on hobby and how it plays into this?
Well, I think hobbies are very, very engaging, and we do them in our pastime because we love them. And if there's a way to turn those hobbies into businesses, you have the best of all worlds. And I can tell you, it's easier to create a business around a hobby now than it ever has been before. And we just interviewed, in fact, a guy named Marshall Miller, who is a base jumper. He's a human flyer, and he hated his work, and he would live for weekends so he could go jump off mountains and buildings. And he just kept brainstorming, you know, how could I make a living doing what I absolutely love and live for? And so he went to GoPro and said, hey, I'm jumping off mountains and buildings, and how about if I film this stuff? And we use the footage to promote GoPro cameras. And so they said, fabulous. And he formed the GoPro Bomb Squad. And so now he makes his living jumping off of mountains and buildings and providing footage. He puts, you know, sponsorships on his wingsuit and on his helmet, and he provides footage for companies. And he's been doing it successfully. He was able to quit his corporate job, and he's been doing this now for 10 years. Making a great living. And I just see that over and over again. John Schmidt is a very good friend of mine who turned his passion for music. It kind of blew up when YouTube was introduced, the piano guys. But he's doing exactly what he loves. And I met another guy that loves literature, and he wanted to get involved in the literary community in some way, in the artistic community. So he started a company, having artists put their art on journals and books and notebooks, and he sells them to corporations. And so I've seen so many people that are able to say, here's what I love. Is there any way at all you can make a living doing that? And if you love it, other people love it, and there's probably an opportunity to provide some guidance and direction or consulting or some service into that space of people. So I think it's very possible.
Yeah, Mike, be careful bringing up music, because you might get Matt started. And he is a budding musician, and he's not that good, but and if you give him any sort of dream here, you know, he might just quit the law firm and start going on tour. So no offense, Matt. No offense. I just want to keep you grounded.
Yeah. You know, it's let's be honest, I'd rather be a rock star than anything else, and lawyer's second to that. So I'll take that.
Yeah, that's close.
Clearly, I'm better at one than the other. That's why I do the one. Mike, any other final thoughts you have for us? I appreciate you being on and all of your insights. It's been very, very informative. But any final insights you had for us and our listeners about building a business and anything that was really, you know, helpful as you've interviewed all these other hundreds of entrepreneurs?
Yeah, my goal, I just have an incredible passion for helping people create and build companies like I've done in my career. I just get so much enjoyment out of it that this bike ride across America, the purpose was really to see if we could crack the code or discover a formula and document that in a book, the differences that make the most difference between success and failure. And the book is called Main Street Entrepreneur. And what it is, it's a roadmap that can teach, I believe it can teach anybody how to do this. And it systematically goes through the steps. You know, here are the 9 key concepts we learned that these successful companies had in common. And there's some, you know, brief assessments and some questions to help you prepare yourself on those concepts. And I really believe it ups your odds. The things we found that we're trying to share with people, it ups the odds that you can be successful building your own business, doing something that you like to do. And I guess the question, when I finished that tour, the question I got from journalists all across the country was, what did you learn and what's the most important thing you learned? And I guess what I learned and I said to them is I really came to believe that anybody can do this. Anybody can create a job for themselves. Anybody can create a successful small to even large company. And you just have to learn the key practices. It's not genetic. It's not in our DNA. It's not personality. It's a set of practices that we implement into a marketplace. And we think in the book, Main Street Entrepreneur, we've been able to document those practices, what they are, and make them simple.
I love what you just said there. Anybody can do it. A quote from Ratatouille. So, sorry, I have kids. Let me throw this out. Mike, where can we send people to get your books or more info? Where do you want to send folks?
The MainStreetEntrepreneur.com outlines our entire project, the interviews, the videos, the book is highlighted. We're doing a full-length documentary right now, and we have a Kickstarter campaign going on to fund the last part of the filming and editing of this documentary. But it's about the future of work in America and how we can best be prepared to create our own jobs and take care of ourselves. So it's themainstreetentrepreneur.com.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Everybody get out there. I'm going to go on Kickstarter and give it a few bucks. Absolutely. Mike, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, we've got some really amazing rewards. We've got 3 weeks left on the campaign. We're more than half funded. And the rewards, you can get a copy of the book. You can get your name in the credits of the film. You can get this really cool T-shirt that says, I love Main Street Business. There's just a lot of neat things there we're trying to share with people that, you know, want to join this Main Street movement of getting us all back to doing things we like doing in our communities.
Way cool. Well, thanks again for joining us. We got to have you back. When you get that documentary released, give us an email and we'll call and we'll have you back on the show to talk about it. Love it.
Let's do it. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Great talking to you.
All right. Thank
bye-bye.
You. Now, Matt, you might have even a 5-star review for us. Someone that's loving the show.
I do. We had a review from Brian. Says, I enjoy the show and topics you guys cover. Find it very relatable to business and what I'm currently doing in my business. So thanks for those who go on to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It does help us and help other people find the show. And if you do give us a 5-star review, you know, it's really easy to do on iTunes. Just let us know that you did so and let us know what your review was. Just shoot Mark and I an email. You can do that M-A-T or M-A-R-K. At kqslawyers.com. But just send us an email because your usernames on iTunes are really hard to figure out. But if you send us an email, we will send you a free copy of either mine or Mark's book. And we appreciate all those listening. It's always exciting to be here. I love that the interview today and Mike. I thought he had a lot of great points and a lot of great experience that really applicable to me and I know to a lot of our clients. So hopefully you guys found the show insightful today.
Yeah, love it. Great closing note there, Matt. And, we're going to be here every week. And I really just got to hit the right button there, man. You know, if we get that spot, if we get that sponsor we're looking for, we can afford someone to hit the buttons. So if you, if you'd like to sponsor our weekly question of the week, give us a call. Get that help. Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Living the dream. Refresh Your Wealth Show. We want to help you get to where you want to go. Thanks so much for listening and continue to share the knowledge.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.